Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Quick update from the Supreme Court via the excellent Supreme Court watching blog, SCOTUS blog. This came a few minutes ago, and it says the court was skeptical that the whole act should fall if the individual mandate is invalidated, but there wasn't any clear indication of how far the court would go. It seemed like there wasn't much question, except from Justice Sotomayor, that the community rating and mandatory issue provisions would fail. In other words, that without the mandate, they couldn't afford these certain high standards of health insurance. The fact that the liberals were very engaged, however, writes Tom Goldstein, writes Kevin Russell from SCOTUS blog, particularly Justice Kagan, may show that they're very worried that the mandate is going to be held unconstitutional. So in other words, the liberals on the court are worried about that. So they were very engaged on the question of whether the whole law should be struck down if the mandate is. We'll be getting another update from the Supreme Court here on the show in a few minutes, so stay with us for that on this final day of the three-day hearing. But right now, with all eyes on Syria and the government crackdown on protesters there, my next guest is asking for a little attention for Bahrain. Bahrain is an island oil-producing Gulf state, if you don't know, that also hosts a U.S. naval base with a Shiite majority population ruled by a Sunni royal family. Pro-democracy protests started last February, but the government, with Saudi assistance, was able to violently suppress the demonstrations. Listeners might remember when the Times columnist Nicholas Kristof was detained while covering the protests in Bahrain. My next guest, Dr. Nada Daif, is one of 20 Bahraini medical personnel to be arrested after volunteering at a clinic set up to treat wounded protesters. She has spoken out about the torture and mistreatment that she and others have experienced at the hands of the Bahraini police, and she is currently appealing the 15-year sentence that she was given in a military court proceeding. A U.S. arms deal is currently on hold because of the human rights concerns, but administration criticism of the crackdown by the royal family against the protesters has been muted. Welcome to WNYC, Dr. Daif.
Hello, Brian.
Tell us about your medical practice before and then during the protests.
Well, before the protests, I used to practice in my private clinic. And when the protests took place, I decided to volunteer with my other colleagues to set up a medical tent, a shift clinic to help the injured people, regardless whether they're protesting or not. We're not really concerned about their political situation. During the protests, we had few injuries. The protesters, they were attacked by the police. Sometimes the wounds and injuries, they were really, really bad that they had to be admitted at the major hospital in Bahrain to perform serious surgeries, especially when live ammunition was used against the protesters and bullets and even to the extent like the tear gas could be used at a very short range to attack the protesters and cause serious fracture of the skulls, which is kind of strange.
You were detained from March until May with 20 doctors and nurses. Were they all detained for months, and were you all charged with the same thing?
Basically, yes, we're 20 who are in the felony group, but the total number is 51. Actually, it's more than that, but who are being tried and taken to military court, we are all 51, and then they divided us into groups. There's the felonies facing the serious charges all together, and there's the misdemeanors with the least serious things that their sentencing might go up to 3 years, and then the other three in separate cases. So, yes, the 20 in my group were facing the serious crimes here, and we were charged of things like occupying the hospital and possessing weapons and overthrowing of the regime of Bahrain, which and we were sentenced for these for 15 years. After, of course, they obstructed confessions under severe torture in the jails and in the presence of Al-Khalifa family.
And as a result of an inquiry, I gather you and the other medical personnel have been given new civilian trials. Is that procedure underway already?
Well, actually, the news came out, the statement came out to the international community that we are given a new trial, which is totally not true. I mean, we lost one important step at the at our case at the law, which that can prove us innocent and can just reveal the justice, but we are basically not getting a new trial. We're appealing the verdict, which is the second step.
How do you want Americans to think of Bahrain? You know, when Nicholas Kristof, the New York Times columnist, was reporting on the crackdown and the protests, he was always careful to note that Bahrain is considered a U.S. ally and a moderate government. For example, women have the right to vote and to drive and are actually some of the main organizers of the protests. And the Bahraini government set up this inquiry last fall, and its findings were not soft-pedaled. They reported that torture was widespread and that there were 35 deaths during the crackdown from both protesters and security forces. So how badly do you want Americans to think of the Bahrain government?
Well, actually, the Americans are really sympathetic to the Bahrainis, at least those who know about what's going on in Bahrain. Unlike the administration and the policy of the government, the U.S. government, and I don't see them taking the human rights violations seriously in Bahrain. They're going really soft with the government. They're taking it very silently, unlike the way they're responding to Syria or Libya or to the other parts of the world. I would call Bahrain as the forgotten part in the Arab Spring, and I would love I want the awareness of Bahrain and the violations taking place to be increased. We're suffering in Bahrain because of the double standards of the U.S. Administration towards Bahrain.
The king announced reforms and an end to torture and hired police advisors from London and Miami to work with a Bahraini police force. Is that making a difference?
The reforms when it comes to the police, it's really, really minimal. I know what reports and what things you hear here seems very glamorous and nice and everything is going very well. But in reality, it's not the same. The same thing is still going on. The police are not behaving in a good way. They're still attacking people. They're still raiding the villages and people's houses and they're attacking them in the middle of the night, arresting them. The torture is still taking place, but instead of torturing the victims and protesters within the police facilities, they're taking them somewhere else, somewhere like you can call it the secret torture facilities, where they take the protesters, beat them up, and then take them to the police station and make them sign the confessions. So the scenario is just exactly the same since a year ago. The only difference is they're doing it in a smarter way, not in front of the cameras.
Mm. Before you go, Bahrain is ruled by a Sunni majority, that sees yes. Iran behind the protests by the Shiite majority. Do you see the situation in sectarian terms?
Definitely the situation is not sectarian at all. The government of Bahrain wants to make it look like it's a sectarian. We have lots of Sunnis among us, and these are just the legitimate cause for democracy and freedom. And basically to make it look like a Sunni-Shi thing, a sectarian thing, works for them. And to make the protesters look like they're backed from Iran and Hezbollah and such things works very well to get some international attention and to support them and what they're doing towards the civilians in Bahrain. but definitely not. It's not sectarian at all.
And what's your status right now? Will you go back for trial?
Yes, actually, I'm supposed to go in court today. Today there was a hearing for the doctors. My colleagues, they appeared in front of the court. I couldn't make it because I'm here in the States. But and by the way, I'm the only one who's allowed to travel and leave Bahrain, while the rest of my colleagues are, I can say they're held as hostages in Bahrain. They don't have the freedom to leave Bahrain or travel, even though in many cases it's a must and a necessity. Some of them are seriously ill and need to be treated outside Bahrain. But yes, I'm going back to Bahrain as soon as I finish my U.S. trip.
Why were you able to leave to do this speaking tour with the group Human Rights First?
Why am I allowed to travel? Is this a question?
Yes, because you're here doing a speaking tour, trying to communicate this message to Americans with the group Human Rights First. You wouldn't think the government would want you to do that.
Well, yes, the government would definitely. They don't want me to do that. But basically, I was very outspoken about what happened. And I was talking to the media, explaining and contacting with the NGOs and working closely, especially Human Rights First. And then they decided to lift the travel ban in order just to get rid of me. And they wanted me to leave Bahrain and just go and not to come back. But I think they were surprised that I was going back and forth. And I decided, of course, to fight this along with my other colleagues. It's a long journey. It's a battle for freedom, and I'm willing to take it.
And we will have to leave it there. I've been speaking with Dr. Nada Daif about the human rights situation in Bahrain and her own trial, which reportedly stemmed from treating protesters who were wounded after a government crackdown last year. Good luck to you and to your country.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll come back to the Supreme Court health reform hearings. Now entering their final 15 minutes, can the court strike down only the mandate and leave the rest of the law intact? We'll find out what's been going on inside the courtroom this morning and talk about what we know.